Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to the third edition of Scrambled Eggs. I am Joe McCann, and Phil Bush is with us. Phil, did you have a good National Marquette Day?
I had a fair to okay Marquette week. You know, nothing big happened.
We have plenty to talk about. Marquette, really, with three big wins, I would say, two on the court and possibly one off the court. We're going to try to get to all of that and maybe try to keep this podcast under 2 hours, but no promises because we do have a lot to get to. I think I want to talk about the thing most fresh in our minds, which is the win over Notre Dame on Saturday, which I think the team really just came out like you would expect a team to come out at home and beat what I would consider an inferior opponent, even though Marquette or Notre Dame was ranked higher. Marquette just played a really solid game, even though it got a little close towards the end. All in all, I think about as complete a game you can play.
Absolutely, and what was fascinating about the game is, especially when you compare it to previous games, is different players stepped up, and it was a complete game from multiple players, and everyone kind of had their role. I'd be hard-pressed to really find one player where I was like, yeah, they didn't play well. Vander struggled a little bit, but that's only in comparison to how well everyone else played. So they really stepped up, and you know, like you said, they let them back in a little bit, but for the most part, right from the get-go, there was one moment where I think it was Jameel Wilson went for a corner three and it just rimmed out. I think when it was like 31-16, where I thought the roof was going to come off the Bradley Center. It was about as loud as I had ever heard it.
That's saying a lot because the Bradley Center was really loud twice this week with that and the Syracuse game. And I think what I like this week is Marquette got two big wins. And in each game, they got an outstanding performance from a big man. In the Notre Dame game, Chris Otule has continued to be, I wouldn't say great shooting because all of his shots are within 5 feet, but very efficient shooting because he's taking easy shots and they're all going in. Chris Otule over his last 8 games, so going back to the South Florida game, is 28 of 33 from the field. So he's getting to the basket, getting easy layups. He had 16 points yesterday, 8 of 8 from the field. That's about as well as Otule has played in his entire career.
He's doing his best Devontae Gardner impersonation without all the without all the and one stuff. I mean, his shooting's been fantastic. He's getting up and down the court. His defense has been wonderful. It's just interesting that the last two games, the last two games, the team has completely changed their format of attacking. They've gone from a guard oriented, swing the ball around the perimeter, attack the lanes with a dribble drive, to now they're almost a completely inside out team where they're looking to post just about every time and then kick it back out, or the big man goes to work in Otule or Gardner. And it's interesting because I think it's had to a certain extent a negative impact on Lockett and Vander Blue because they're not really inside out type players, but it's been really amazing to see a team kind of change styles mid-season simply because that's the personnel matchings that work for them in those particular games.
Right, and the thing, paint touches, which of course has been always been a popular term under Buzz Williams, has always been their strategy to get the ball into the paint. But like you referred to in the past, because when they've had shooters like Jay Crowder and Darius Johnson Odom, the point was to get it into the paint so you can get it back out and get some open shots. But now, as you just referenced, the idea is just get it in the paint and keep it in the paint. Because when you've got guys who can go to work like Gardner and Otule and you can get a dozen or more points from them every night, yeah, you're right. And it is refreshing to have big guys that you can depend on and guys that are going to get the other team's big guys in foul trouble.
Well, and what's amazing is, so you've got the down low presence where we're getting bunnies. But you've also shown Gardner and especially Wilson have shown an ability to get that mid-range jumper. I mean, Wilson put on a
19 points yesterday.
Yeah, put on a one-man clinic in the second half and was solely responsible for that game not getting closer than it did in the second half because he just decided, I'm going to just start shooting this. I'm going to run around. I'm going to take my man and just jump shoot over him. So that's, you know, and Wilson's come, you know, kind of between Wilson and Steve Taylor, they've kind of made Juan Anderson irrelevant at this point, which, you know, it's a good problem to have. We have so much talent that someone that's got a lot of talent like Juan is not seeing as much time as he might otherwise normally see.
And Juan did have a big three early in the game, kind of that early run that really kind of put Notre Dame on its heels in the first half. So Juan is still contributing, but as you said, when Jameel Wilson is playing well and when Steve Taylor is hitting the boards as well as he does, you're just not going to see as much of Juan, at least not this year. But I think certainly Juan has a place on this team this year and going forward, just because he's shown flashes of what he can be.
Right. Well, and it's interesting because in yesterday's game, Juan hit the trailing three. Steve Taylor hit a trailer three. Jameel Wilson hit a trailer three. So apparently that wasn't just a Jay Crowder thing. That's now something Marquette
basketball or a Lazar Hayward thing.
That's now just a Marquette basketball thing. That our big four, our big power forward is going to hit a trailing three in transition, which is fine if it's going in, which they did yesterday. That's all I can ask. At one point, I think I looked up in the stats in the first half, and I think Marquette was something like 14 of 18 shooting, no turnovers, 7 assists, 2 of 3 from beyond the arc. The offensive efficiency was insane.
Right. The turnovers really piled up late in the game because by the end of the day, they actually had more turnovers than Notre Dame. They had 15 and Notre Dame's 13, but I would guess probably more than half of those came in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, they started to get sloppy, and especially that's when I said, you know, we didn't have a good person to pick on, as you didn't play well. But Vander did have a few where he just all of a sudden apparently put Crisco on his hands instead of grip in the timeouts, because the ball just started getting sloppy and he started losing it. But that's about the worst thing I could come up with that anyone had.
Bottom line, Marquette got another win. They're still in great shape. And it was just a great follow-up to the win over Syracuse, which we talked about a lot last week. And, you know, you were on the side of that you thought it was a good matchup, and you turned out to be right. Steve Taylor did have, had some nice contributions in that game. And, you know, I was thinking going into that game that Syracuse was going to have a little bit too much. And that's the way it looked through the first, say, 8 minutes. And, you know, you got to give it to Buzz Williams for putting Jake Thomas in that game when he did. That's one of those things I said on Twitter. It's the difference between genius and insanity is measured strictly by success. If, you know, Jake Thomas goes in there and does nothing, you wonder, what did he do? But Jake Thomas went in there, hit a huge three, his first points since the Mayan apocalypse on December 22nd.
And does this mean the Mayan apocalypse is now going to happen?
I hope not.
Oh,
because I would still like to have a tournament this year.
The way they're playing, I'd like to. Yes.
Yeah, but it was a huge moment for Jake and a huge moment for the team, because that 4-point play stunned everybody and it really turned the game around.
Well, and I have to say, if anyone ever questions Buzz Williams' ability to coach, or there ever gets into controversy over whether the administration wants Buzz to stay or is willing to let him go somewhere else, I'm just going to walk in and put in the tape from the Syracuse game. Those, you know, putting in Jake Thomas, yeah, the results, you know, kind of defend the decision, but the changes, in-game decisions that Buzz made in that game and some of the things they did, I mean, there was a whole lot of risk-reward. We talked about Steve Taylor. He was going offense-defense for Steve Taylor and Vander Blue, putting Vander in on offense for ball handling and free throw shooting, and putting Steve Taylor in as one of the wings on defense. I was flabbergasted that Steve Taylor would be a go-to person on defense as a freshman. And it could have cost Buzz from a looking backwards standpoint, because there was one point in that game, I think it was Sutherland was out on the left wing, and there was a lazy pass to him, and Steve Taylor lunged for it and was nanometers away from deflecting the pass, but missed, flew by Sutherland and gave him a wide open look at a three that thankfully he missed. So he was still gambling like a freshman, but the fact that he was in the last 2 minutes in that game, it just goes to show you what Buzz Williams makes the decisions on who's giving him the best opportunity to win. He's not dedicated to any one player or system or style. He'll adapt to whatever gets in the wind.
I agree. And the he did so many good things. Like you said, like later in the game, he put Jake Thomas back in. And then, you know, he didn't get a whole lot out of Jake. He didn't get anything out of Jake offensively. But Jake, you know, didn't kill him defensively. But then he moved Todd Mayo into the game after Todd hadn't played a lot early in the first half. And then Todd Mayo hit two huge threes that really, you know, put Marquette ahead and kept them ahead.
Right. And then not only that, so he leveraged off those threes, both Jake's three, because Syracuse started watching him better, and then Todd Mayo's threes. And then he started flashing Devontae and Jamil to the top of the paint, where the passes were getting in there much easier than they were previously, because previously Syracuse was kind of sagging, and their center was up near the free throw line, so there wasn't any entry passes kind of into the elbow. As soon as they opened it up with the threes, that space kind of opened up, and then Buzz said, all right, now we're going to attack there. And kind of just whatever move Syracuse made, Buzz made, in my opinion, the perfect counter move every time, and that's how we ended up, you know, kind of pulling away late. And, you know, because at one point before the Jake Thomas four-point play, we were down 11, and I was pretty convinced. I was watching it on DVR. I almost, at that point, turned to my wife and asked her to look it up online just to see if I'm going to be wasting my time with a 40-point blowout.
Right. I was feeling blowout when Marquette was down 11 there in the first half. But what a rally. Like you said, all the adjustments that Buzz made. And even late in the game, it seems like, you know, he just found the lineup, which was mostly bench players, that was working. Said, let's just stick with those guys and keep them going. So great effort. Great adjustments. And you can't talk about that game really without breaking down Devontae Gardner and the effort he made. 26 points, 7 of 7 from the floor, 12 of 13 from the free throw line, 8 boards.
The only missed free throw was one off a technical foul, his first one.
Right. Made his last 12.
Yeah, he even had a slightly set shot, jump shot. Well, it's gotten to the point where in Saturday's Notre Dame game, Devontae Gardner 3 or 4 times had the ball kind of by himself at the top of the arc, and the Bradley Center was audibly screaming go. They either wanted him to shoot the three or take the ball to the hoop. I think he's created a legend that may not be sustainable, especially with that Syracuse game. Everything he wanted to do, he could do. And Syracuse has some really strong athletic players. They just didn't have his size, and they didn't have his will to get to the bucket.
Gardner was unstoppable. You know, we talked last week about how 1 week can really change perception a lot, because a week ago, a lot of Marquette fans, maybe me included, standing on the ledge after a loss to Villanova, thinking, oh, man, we're in trouble now. You know, are we even going to get a double bye? Are we going to lose 3 of our last 4? And now, 1 week later, how everything changes. 2 big wins for Marquette, and we are once again talking, can this team win a Big East championship? And obviously Georgetown is in the driver's seat. Georgetown controls its own destiny. But Marquette certainly enters this last week with some hope that it can at least tie for a Big East championship.
That would be just such icing. I mean, I hate to say it, but I'm almost to the point where I'm satisfied with what we've got now. I'd love to win a conference championship, but if we get we're guaranteed a double bye, so we can rest some before the tournament. You know, we're guaranteed. I feel comfortable saying, barring something catastrophic, we're going to get at least a 5 seed or better in the March Madness. The Big East title would be great. We've got a couple of road games here, which have been questionable at best for us. But I'm just excited based on where I was in October that this is even a possibility.
I agree. Yeah, I think a couple notes from the weekend. Like you mentioned, they clinched the double bye. So even if somehow Marquette loses these next 2 games, they'll finish no lower than 4th in the conference. So they'll have the double bye in the Big East tournament, meaning they only have to win 3 games at Madison Square Garden to win the Big East tournament. And I looked it up, and I believe I'm correct on this. This is the first year that Marquette has gone unbeaten at home since 2001-2002, Dwayne Wade's first year playing.
Jeez, the fact that this is the team, and I think we, my seat partner yesterday and I were talking about it, and he mentioned that same statistic, and his comment was, would you believe this is the team that did that? All the talent we've had go through here in the last 10 years, that this is the team that's going undefeated.
Right. You know, Marquette, obviously, like a lot of teams do, really, very tough, has a reputation for being very tough at home, doesn't lose many home games. But every year there is that one stinker at home that they lose. Last year it was Vanderbilt. In the past year, if they lost home games to Wisconsin, they even had that total stinker against North Dakota State a few years ago. But
Western Michigan in the NIT.
Right. They've had some stinkers at home, at least one every year, but not this year.
It's not like we weren't playing untalented team. We played
Wisconsin
at home, Syracuse, Notre Dame, Pitt. I mean, we played strong talent. Yeah, Georgetown, which took a junior Cadugan three at the last second to tie up to go to overtime. It just kind of boggles the mind.
But great year at home. Now we're talking Big East Championship. Here's what Marquette and the competitors looking at over the next week. Georgetown on the road for both of their last two games. Georgetown obviously has the toughest road, but Georgetown does have that one-game cushion. They are at Villanova on Wednesday. We know how tough going to Villanova can be. And at Syracuse for the season finale on Saturday. Louisville tied with Marquette for second right now. I guess if, as it stands, Louisville would get the 2 seed, having the head-to-head advantage. But Cincinnati on Monday at home, Notre Dame Saturday at home. So Louisville has 2 home games. But you would probably say Marquette has, at least opponent-wise, the easiest, I hesitate to say that because they're on the road, though, last 2 games, because it's Rutgers and St. John's, both on the road. I guess even though they're on the road, I think I'd rather still be playing Rutgers and St. John's than Cincinnati and Notre Dame the last 2 weeks.
Absolutely correct.
Last 2 games. But so that's what we're looking at over the last week. You think there would be a chance that Georgetown could drop one of those games and there could be a tie at the top, which is exciting. But before we get ahead of ourselves, can Marquette get out of the road funk and get these last 2 road wins? It seems to be low-hanging fruit. Again, I hesitate to say this, but they're taking on 2 teams that are at the bottom of the Big East standings in Rutgers and St. John's. Not only that, 2 teams that are missing their leading scorers. Rutgers' Eli Carter is out for the season with a broken leg. St. John's' D'Angelo Harrison has been suspended for the rest of the season, so he won't be playing either. Rutgers 4-12 in the league. St. John's, I guess to say they're at the bottom, maybe overstating it, because they are 8-8 in the league, so they're tied with Cincinnati and Providence. And I think they've kind of been back and forth as far as bubble talk, so I guess the thing that concerns me the most this week would be St. John's, even though they're not going to have Harrison, being a desperate team, desperate for a win to increase its chances to get into the tournament.
Yeah, the RAC is always a tough place to play. That's a bandbox. It was a couple of years ago, I remember, big snowstorm in the East Coast. We went in there with the Big Three, and if I remember correctly, I think we lost in a tight game where I'm blanking on the volume shooter that they used to have a couple of years ago for Rutgers. But anyway.
Rosario.
What's that?
Mike Rosario?
Yes. Yeah, Rosario. He kind of just went off on us, just laying 3 after 3. So it's no easy task going into Rutgers, but I feel pretty confident in that one. St. John's has talent. They're really young. I think they only have 1 junior and 1 senior on the roster. So they've got a lot of talent. They've got Steve Lavin, but they just don't have the experience yet. So that's one of those things. They may be inexperienced enough to think they can actually win that game, which is tough. It'll be interesting because we aren't that far removed from Villanova, where we didn't play well. But the Syracuse and Notre Dame game has shown me that Marquette can win just about any way. I don't think Rutgers and St. John's have the length and the athleticism to really struggle or to cause Marquette to struggle. And, you know, if you look at Devontae's game against Syracuse, and then he turned around and had 3 points at Notre Dame, and Otule had, you know, 14 or 16 points against Notre Dame and really kind of owned the joint, we can win all sorts of different ways. I think of the two, St. John's concerns me the most because I think they're the ones that can press us the most, which we still seem, we even saw in the Notre Dame game, pressing is just not something we handle well, and I haven't figured out why.
Yeah, for whatever reason, you would think, you know, if Marquette maybe is in a spot when it's seeing a lot of press, maybe even go smaller, get more ball handlers out there, put Kadugan, Mayo, and Blue all out there together. And, you know, I think Jameel Wilson can handle the ball, be the kind of the big guy. I always liked having kind of a big guy who maybe not necessarily can dribble, but can at least handle the ball that you trust to get that, you know, that extra touch and let the guards run a little bit. I always remember when the 03 team, Scott Merritt was a guy, you got it, like had him kind of in the middle of the floor. He could handle the ball for a second because his man was never on him. And so he could handle the ball for a second and then get it out to, you know, whether it was Diener or Wade, or give them a second to get away from their defender.
Yeah, I don't know why we still struggle with the press, but like I said, that's the thing that concerns me about St. John's is they do have some speed, they do have some length. They're not as talented or the same kind of team as Villanova, but I think they could present similar matchup, you know, conditions even without Harrison. Is it likely that St. John's beats us? No, I feel pretty confident that we beat both Rutgers and St. John's. But if I had to pick between the two, I think St. John's is the tougher, especially at that point we'll know. Well, I don't think we'll know because I think the Georgetown game's later in the day.
Right. Georgetown plays at Georgetown is the early game. So Georgetown plays at 11 a.m. that day.
And Marquette we're at 1 o'clock.
Marquette plays, I think, at 2.
Oh, okay. So at that point, we'll know whether, and that would be interesting, we'll know whether or not we need to win to get a conference title shot.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how that impacts the game.
Well, yeah, I wonder if Buzz will keep his guys in the dark, though. Say, you know, he doesn't want his guys scoreboard watching and having their minds somewhere else. He'll probably have them occupied with a shoot-around or talking about St. John's and maybe keep them in the dark. But, you know, you can't prevent the guys from looking up at the scoreboard, seeing the out-of-town scores during the game.
Right. I would keep them in the dark, I guess. But at the end of the day, if Georgetown's got it locked up, I guess I don't know what it matters. But, you know, it may matter in terms of whether they were the 2 or the 3 seed in the conference tournament if we win or lose at St. John's. But speaking of the conference tournament and the top 4 seed, random question. The only team we haven't beat out of the loser leaves town bracket, otherwise known as get the heck out of the Big East, is Louisville.
Right.
We have terrible matchup problems with Louisville. We hate Louisville. Do we want to see Louisville in the conference tournament, or do we want to avoid them?
If I knew Marquette was going to win, I would say bring it on. But I don't want to sound cowardly and say, like you said, having a bad matchup, I don't want to play them. But honestly, yeah, I would rather not play Louisville because, let's face it, Patino is kind of eating Buzz's lunch over the last few years. As much as I would love to see Marquette beat Louisville and grab a Big East title, I do think it is a tough matchup. So it would be great to see maybe Marquette somehow have the 1 seed and meet Louisville in the quarters or in the final somehow. But I think inevitably, if you're going to win a Big East title, you're going to have to beat a team like that. So I would say it doesn't matter, really. You know, you're not going to win the Big East tournament by beating St. John's, Rutgers, and South Florida on the way. You know, you're going to have to beat somebody really good. So if it's Louisville, Syracuse, you know, whoever it is, whatever, bring it on. And I would like another shot at Louisville just to see if we could beat them if Marquette is playing really well. You know, if they're getting a lot of production out of Otule and Gardner and can somehow solve the press.
Well, and it's a neutral court, so that's going to have some advantage because obviously the last time we played them, we were on the road. But I'm in agreement with you. That would be the worst thing to do is lose to Louisville again and have that be the last taste in our mouth, you know, before the teams go their separate ways in terms of conference, but it would also be one of the greatest feelings ever to beat Patino on the road, or beat Patino in the conference tournament, get that done out of the way, and then we can say we've beat every team that we're quote unquote kicking out of the Big East. Even though Rick Pitino is somebody I extremely dislike, he did say some flattering things about the conference and in our projected split, which is one of the things we wanted to talk about in the Catholic Seven moving out. But I still want to crush him.
Right. My last thoughts on the road games before we talk about Catholic Seven. Despite the road struggles, it's not like Marquette is winless on the road. I mean, Marquette has won some games and played some good games on the road against mediocre opponents like South Florida. Had a great game at South Florida.
Had a great half against Seton Hall.
Yeah. Had a great half at Cincinnati in the game that Marquette lost.
Yeah, that's
the second
true.
Half was a great half. Marquette just lost. But you would think with so much on the line, with a Big East tournament, with almost within their grasp, granted they don't control their own destiny, you would think Marquette could put together two, maybe not great, but two decent games in a row against inferior opponents that are missing their leading scorer and just get two wins and just see what happens.
Well, these are the two wins that you win these and they don't even have to be blowouts. You just win convincingly.
I don't care if they win each game by 1 point. Just give me two wins and let's see what Georgetown does.
Right, but these are the wins. If you win it, like you're in control. These are the types of wins that give you confidence that you can roll against anyone in the March Madness tournament. Because otherwise, if you struggle against these teams, it literally means it's kind of a crapshoot which Marquette team shows up. They're sometimes good, sometimes bad. It's kind of a luck of a draw as opposed to being consistently good.
Here's to hoping Marquette ruins another St. John's Senior Day. I believe, wasn't it a St. John's Senior Day when Jimmy Butler hit that last-second shot to beat St. John's a couple years ago?
Yes, which I believe was his third last-second shot of the season, because he had the one against Cincinnati when they decided to play Party in the USA, which apparently was his favorite song, and he was excited to hit the shot with that playing. So, I'd love to ruin St. John's.
Let's hope it doesn't come down to a last shot, but let's hope Marquette can put their road woes aside and, like I said, beat two inferior opponents. Just don't turn the ball over. Get the ball inside. The way the big guys are playing, I think you can get safe, easy buckets, and we'll see what happens. But as you alluded to a minute ago, let's talk Catholic Seven, or should I say the new Big East. Reports are out there. Nothing is official yet, but things may be official in the days to come. That it looks like, we talked about this last week, Phil, that it seemingly was not much movement on the new league for Marquette, Georgetown, Villanova, Seton Hall, St. John's, Providence, DePaul. But there was some movement this week, and even so many reports that are saying it was a done deal and they would be wrapped up by Friday. Nothing was official Friday, but it is looking more and more likely now that this new league is going to start next year. Still some moving parts. May not see anything official till maybe Tuesday. Apparently Fox has some announcements on Tuesday where they're probably going to announce their new networks, Fox Sports 1 and whatever else they're going to be doing. And the hope is that maybe this deal with our league, which apparently is going to be still called the Big East, which I think is certainly a nice win for this group.
Yeah, I think everything I read makes me excited. I mean, I've gone on record as saying I didn't care if we kept the Big East name. Since we are, unless something comes out that we had to promise the firstborn child of every future player to retain the Big East name, barring something like that, all right, we got a good deal. It sounds like we're going to have MSG for the tournament, which was critical to me. We're going to have the Big East name, which is established, so you don't have to go through the effort of creating one. And you can even do things like take the old Big East logo and start some sort of campaign around, you know, hey, the old Big East is back, and really kind of play up that angle and do that sort of thing. So I think ultimately it's really good. What's interesting is, you know, as we both know, and as listeners of this podcast know, I'm no journalist nor professionally trained to be one, but I actually have a source, so to speak, in terms of talking to someone that works over at Marquette, and they were kind of syncing up everything that we were reading in reports in terms of, you know, Fox Sports is making an announcement on Tuesday, and they were kind of hearing similar things inside Marquette and stuff like that. So I think it makes this all really exciting, and it's gonna be a lot of good things. And I think the biggest thing is that we're moving on as of July that we're going to get out and just start playing with without all the drama of sticking around for another year or two.
Early reports indicate that it looks like Marquette or the league will only might only be 9 next year, although it's nothing. Again, this is nothing official, but it, most reports are saying that Xavier and Butler could be joining the league next year, with 3 more reportedly, St. Louis, Creighton, and Dayton, joining in 2014. Your thoughts on possibly that those being the 5, Phil? Xavier, Butler, St. Louis, Creighton, and Dayton. Just about what we talked about last week, maybe with Dayton kind of being that team on the fence where we were maybe debating VCU or Richmond or someone else.
I'm still, the first 3, Xavier, Butler, Creighton, those were the 3 I thought we needed to go to get to 10. So I'm great there. I would actually be surprised if Creighton's not in this next year, because I believe the MWC doesn't have an exit fee. So if Creighton's invited, I would imagine they could go right away without having to pay an exit fee. But I don't know that for sure. Dayton and St. Louis, I guess I'm okay with it. It's not the worst thing I've ever heard. I would have rathered someone like, and I'm kind of surprised that we're not getting a push for someone like a VCU as an Eastern Seaborne partner with Georgetown, St. John's, Seton Hall, especially given what VCU did to Butler on Saturday.
Right. And, you know, you can't base these things on how teams were playing this year. You got to look at long-term potential. But even then, VCU has always had a nice program. I mean, they've had they've been cranking out good coaches that, I don't want to call it a stepping stone program, but I guess it is in some ways, because it's a place where guys like Capel, Anthony Grant, and Shaka Smart get their starts and establish themselves as coaches before going on to bigger jobs. But VCU has a nice program, and you think, you know, if VCU were to be in a league like this, it would be a program that coaches like Shaka Smart would stay for a while. Because I actually have a friend at work who is a VCU alum, and his concern is that, you know, he wants VCU in the league because that would keep Shaka around for a while. But with VCU not in this league and maybe staying in a watered-down Atlantic 10, now he and his VCU alum friends are concerned that Shaka may now be looking elsewhere for his future.
Right, which, you know, and I agree with you. You can't judge based on one game or one season. But given the investment that Shaka Smart has stayed around, you know, VCU, I feel, is kind of on the same arc that Butler is. Especially when Butler managed to get Brad Stevens to stay despite offers from a lot of other programs to go. So it kind of ends that rumor as a stepping stone program, or ends that appearance as a stepping stone program. I'm just surprised, I guess, geographically, if Dayton and St. Louis are the 11th and 12th team. Those are 2 very Midwest teams. You know, and I'm surprised Xavier really wants Dayton in this league. So St. Louis, I'm okay with. I don't have any issue with that. Dayton is probably the one I'm least interested in. But at the end of the day, if this is the worst problem we have, I'll take it.
All right. You know, if Dayton is the, you know, Dayton, which is a nice program that goes to the tournament, if that's your 11th best team or 10th best team, you have a pretty decent league, I think. And, you know, some other teams that were in the mix I at least want to talk about. You know, Andy Glockner, who's a guy I follow on Twitter. I think he's a really smart guy, good college basketball writer for SI. He just threw it out there conversationally. You know, why not Gonzaga in this league? And I think, you know, it's obvious to me that if Gonzaga wants in, I think this league would want them in. I'm just not sure Gonzaga wants in, because if you're talking about Gonzaga being in this league, yeah, for the teams that are in the league, it's only one trip west every year. But for Gonzaga, it's several trips east every year, not only for basketball and for all their non-revenue sports. So I don't think Gonzaga geographically would want in just for that reason financially. I think if Gonzaga was located, you know, in the state of Virginia, Gonzaga would have been the first team invited.
Oh, I completely agree with that. It's the economics of it from Gonzaga's perspective makes it difficult, because basketball, if it's just basketball, even that's somewhat difficult, but probably manageable. But can you imagine road trips, you know, maybe in back-to-back weekends, road trips from Gonzaga to Georgetown, and then the next weekend coming out to St. John's? right. just for the basketball alone, that's brutal. Then you've got men's and women's lacrosse, you've got women's volleyball, you've got men's and women's soccer, which...
Yeah, I don't know how many programs Gonzaga has, but I'm sure they have quite a few, and I think it would be a real beating, and I don't think any league would take Gonzaga non-revenue sports just so basketball only could be in this league. So,
well,
you know,
and
as much
I don't
as I
think
would
that's good for long-term stability of the league anyway. I think we want members that are all in for whatever sports they have. I don't think we want them housing sports somewhere else just so they can do something for basketball.
Yeah, I think the only school that would do their one sport somewhere else would be Creighton for baseball, because I don't know if any of these other schools have baseball. But, you know, Creighton's big on baseball because obviously that's where the College World Series is. They have a very nice baseball program, so I'm sure they'll find a home for their baseball program somewhere else.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you know, one sport like baseball, nobody, you know, Creighton's not going to make economic decisions based on the strength of the baseball conference.
Right, no. I bet the Big 12 would take Creighton as a baseball team. Just I don't think Iowa State has baseball anymore, so maybe take that spot. But I... But one other thing that was kind of thrown out there, and I know it was mocked, rightfully so, maybe in some of the Twitter and blogosphere, was it Bray or Swarbrick or maybe both were saying that the Catholic Seven for 1 year is an option for Notre Dame. That's kind of like, seems like they're inviting themselves to the table.
Well,
I don't know.
That's them hitting the panic button.
I think it is, too. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, they would love to have us. And, yeah... I don't know. I think the point of the league is to have no football schools, because I think inevitably Notre Dame will have to join a conference in football, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, whenever it's going to happen. I mean, they've got kind of their dipping their toes in the ACC water now. But it does sound like they're kind of just throwing it out there, inviting themselves into the league, when I'm not sure the Catholic Seven presidents have really even discussed. I'm not in on the conversation, but I don't know if they've even considered Notre Dame since they had the ACC announcement.
Well, and I don't like, you know, I think these are purely business decisions for a large extent, to a large extent. And I don't like to mix personal feelings with business. It makes for bad business. But, you know, Notre Dame has done nothing but look out for itself this entire time. That's why they jumped to the ACC. That's why they have the NBC TV contract. They want their money for themselves. So if they're looking out for number one, why should, as a conference, should we go out of our way to help them?
Right.
They've done nothing to help us necessarily. They didn't do anything to calm the waters. In fact, they accelerated the demise of the Big East by making the move to the ACC.
Right, and business-wise, I understand it, because Notre Dame football needs a bowl tie-in, because Notre Dame football is kind of in a situation where if it doesn't get 9 or 10 wins, it's going to go to the Hawaii Bowl.
Right.
Or nothing else. So I from the business perspective, I understand why Notre Dame went to the ACC, but that still doesn't change the fact that they really dropped a huge bomb on the Big East when they left, and now they're kind of begging to maybe be in the Catholic Seven for a year before, or I should say the new Big East for a year before going to the ACC permanently. The only way I would be okay with that would be if there was a situation in which, say, none of the five schools that we want to join could join next year, so we're looking at a 7-team league, which seems small to me. That means you only got 12 conference games. I guess I would be okay with Notre Dame for a year kind of holding a spot to give the league 8 teams for a year, and then let them be on their merry way, and then we bring in the other 5. Maybe that wouldn't be a popular decision among a lot of the other Catholic Seven fans out there, but just speaking from business perspective, I think a 14-team league, or I'm sorry, a 8-team league would be certainly more appealing, because you get more conference games, more TV games. I don't know exactly how the money works. I'm not that smart. But I would think maybe just a little bit bigger league would not be a bad thing, if and only if we're in a situation where we're looking at a 7-team league next year.
Well, I think you said it exactly right. It makes sense from a business perspective. So you go, if for some reason, which I would be shocked, because I don't know that we'd be this far down the road if Butler and Xavier weren't at a minimum a given.
Right.
It makes business sense to bring them in to be the 8th team. You could even make the argument with me that it makes sense to bring them in as the 10th team if, for whatever reason, Creighton, SLU, Dayton, those teams can't join this next year as the 10th team. business wise, you could squeeze them in. But those are the only two conditions under which I'm okay with Notre Dame having any.
The other condition I would add would be Notre Dame gets a lot less than everyone else. Let's say the other teams are all getting $3 million. I'd say Notre Dame $1 million. You know,
right.
I don't know what Notre Dame would be making in the old Big East. It's probably something very small. Not like Notre Dame needs the money, but it's like I would get, you know, the number I think that was thrown out there last week was like $550,000 or something per team, or maybe $600,000. I don't know. Maybe even now that teams are leaving, maybe it's $1 million. But say if Notre Dame would get $1 million in the old Big East, they get 1.25 in the new Big East if they join for a year, while everyone else gets $3 million.
Right, absolutely. They're the one. They, even with seven teams, they need us more than we need them.
Right. Part-time team, part-time rate.
Right, right, exactly. So, you know, just let them, you know, plus it'd be nice to beat them again.
It would be. And that's the one thing I do want to throw out there. Notre Dame, Louisville, and Wisconsin, we hate them, but we love to hate them. I like playing these teams. And I don't want the rivalries to go away. I think, just as I think Marquette and Wisconsin should play every year, I think Marquette and Notre Dame should play every year. So whether it's 1 year in a conference or if it's non-conference for the foreseeable future, I think these teams should play every year. And I honestly would be okay with, you know, keeping some kind of non-conference rivalry with Louisville going for a while.
Well,
I think the rivalry should continue.
And we're going to have to do that if you think about it from a reality standpoint. While I love the new Big East, I guess, whether it's 10 or 12 teams, depending on which rumor you're looking at, the makeup, that conference is great. I think it's the best deal we could make. It's still going to be a weaker average conference, you know, from an RPI perspective, than the current Big East or the future Big East. Not the future Big East. I take that back. The future Big East would be way worse. But, you know,
I want to call that league the Flow League, FLO, Football Leftovers.
Yeah,
if that works.
Oh, I'm fine, and we can tie it into some sort of Geico or
right.
Whatever the insurance commercial is.
Excuse me, Flow.
We can have her stand out in the rain crying with the rest of the teams that were left behind.
I like that.
But, you know, so the conference isn't going to be as good as the 2005 to 2012 Big East. It'll be better than we would have been, but we're going to have to schedule non-conference opponents that are strong to keep an overall strong strength of schedule. So I think having those, you know, home and homes with Louisville, Notre Dame, Wisconsin, I think that's something we're going to be interested in doing anyway. So we'll just have to structure it that
way. You know, a couple of things I've thrown out there, and this, I had some discussions with some of our Marquette colleagues on Twitter. First of all, I would like to see, even though Gonzaga can't be in the league, I wouldn't mind seeing Gonzaga with some kind of non-conference contract with the league, where Gonzaga, say, maybe plays four teams in the league every year out of conference, because I'm sure Gonzaga's always looking for teams to play them.
I don't know why Gonzaga wouldn't do that. I mean, they try and make their non-conference strength of schedule as strong as possible, so I think there's some mutual interest there that could bring those
I would say
together.
You know, just throw it out, you know, just throw out a number, say four teams. Two teams from the new Big East go to Spokane, and two teams host Gonzaga every year. So Gonzaga plays four teams. It almost kind of sounds like the deal Notre Dame football has with the ACC.
Right.
But it would be beneficial for Gonzaga from a non-conference schedule perspective. It would be good for the league to play a team that's going to have a high RPI every year. And it would be good for television revenue, because I think those games would get on television a lot. So I think to work out something with Gonzaga, even though Gonzaga is not officially in the league, to get them playing teams in this league, I think would be beneficial and get us some West Coast exposure. I think that's something the league should consider, you know, look at once the league gets going. And another thing I kind of threw out there, I blogged about this week. We should have I don't know if we'll still have the Big East SEC Challenge, but we should have a Big East Reunion Challenge with, like, the new schools, the new Big East, and what I call the FU, the football universities, in another division, and just have them square off in kind of like the, you know, Big East SEC Challenge, where, you know, you just pair them up and everyone plays a little non-conference action sometime in November or December.
It would be interesting. It'd be interesting to see if there's any bad blood there. We may have to wait a little bit to let some tempers cool off, because I get the impression, while the flow teams are kind of happy to get rid of us. By the same token, I think they feel like they're kind of getting screwed in the end because their position turns out to be a whole lot weaker than everyone thought it was going to be.
Right. You know, but I'm not just saying just playing the football leftovers. See if you can get Syracuse involved.
Oh, Pitt, sure.
Notre Dame. You know, line up, you know, Syracuse, Pitt, Notre Dame, you know, any other, West Virginia, Louisville. Line up those teams on one side, and then...
So it's almost like alumni versus current students kind of concept.
Yeah, the defectors against the basketball schools.
I like it, actually. There would be some interest there, I think, certainly from within the fans of the both the new and the old Big East. I also think if you get the right matchups, that makes a whole lot of sense from a marketing department.
Georgetown and Syracuse should play every year. I know they hate each other, and it's another, like, just like I've said about Kansas and Missouri and Texas and Texas A&M. You guys need to bury the hatchet. You guys need to keep playing. It's good for the game. The fans love it, and even though it won't be home and home like it's been for the last, you know, forever, these teams should keep playing every year just because the rivalries are what kind of would make college sports great, and they shouldn't go away.
Oh, I agree with you, but what will be interesting to see is an influence in this whole thing, and really what the driver is you know, the new Big East wouldn't happen without Fox Sports being so behind it and throwing a considerable amount of money at it. Right. And they're essentially doing this to create the new Big East as one of their prime cornerstones to take down the ESPN empire, or at least chop it down a little bit. Right. And if ESPN's going to own, you know, the ACC and from a content provider standpoint, it'll be curious to see how much that influences what matchups get allowed to take place, because you don't really, ESPN's not going to want their content crossing over to Fox, and Fox isn't going to want their content crossing over to ESPN. So we may see more of natural rivalries going away simply because the content providers don't play well in the sandbox together.
Yeah, I wish they could get over it somehow, because those games are just fun to watch, and I hope they could. Maybe they can figure it out. I don't know if I want to dive that deep into the business side of it. All I'm saying is work it out.
Yeah, well, I agree. I would like to see Buzz do some sort of jig on somebody's floor at least once a year.
Yeah. At the Marquette watch party I was at this weekend for National Marquette Day, we were at a Fox and the Hound in Dallas, because I live in Texas, for those who are new to the program. And in the same bar, there was a West Virginia watch group, and I was so tempted to just go over there and, you know, just dance a jig in front of their television while they were watching.
Well, I don't think you're big enough to take on 15 West Virginia people.
But I had a good backing. There were like 20 Marquette fans there.
That's so true, but you also don't have a television show about your children going buck wild on TV.
No, and I hope I never do.
Well, that's true. This is a measurement of success, I believe.
That's how they measure it. Good for you, West Virginia. Good for you. Hey, one thing we didn't talk about when we were talking about the Notre Dame game was Senior Day. You know, you were there for Senior Day, Phil, and obviously they honored Cadogan and Lockett. I watched a little bit of the speeches online, but since you were there, what did you think about the ceremonies and, you know, what Cadogan and Lockett had to say to the fans after Senior Day?
Well, first, I think we need to point out that anyone who left before the seniors were honored should have their season tickets revoked. There was a good contingent of people that stayed around, but there were even folks leaving at the 3-minute mark of the Notre Dame game, which wasn't really in question, but, you know, wasn't necessarily sealed either. So I don't understand what it is you're paying for exactly. But the ceremony was great. It was actually shorter than in years past. Some of that's because we didn't have as many players. They let the Buzz was actually very entertaining. He made a manager joke and kind of let the four team managers introduce, which I'd still like to know how you become a team manager, because that seems like it would be a whole lot of work but could be interesting. I didn't know that was something you could really do. But the manager spoke. They actually had some good things to say, so it was nice. Lockett was surprisingly emotional. I was, you know, Lockett's been a good player, but he's only been here 1 year. I can't say I formed a deep emotional attachment to him. But after that speech, it was. I mean, he broke down and started crying and talking about how he couldn't have done this without the Marquette family, and how, you know, he's grown so much and he's only been a year. You know, it was very, very interesting. And it was kind of, it just exemplified everything that I always thought Marquette was in terms of bringing people in, making them a whole person, and really having a positive influence on folks. And Junior's speech was pretty funny, pretty interesting. His mom came out in a full ball gown like she was going to prom, which was interesting. But it was really good, and I thought Junior had a good speech. They did at the end. He decided that he was just going to keep talking, and I think they eventually shut off the mic.
They play the Jaws music like they did at the Oscars.
Yeah, they were like, okay, we're done, good enough. But Junior went around and thanked all his family and thanked the team and did all that. And I think it goes to show what a positive influence everybody has around this. So I thought it was really good.
Couple things I want to say about the guys. We touched on Trent Lockett before here on the podcast. I think expectations were a little too high for him at the beginning. We saw he was a 13-point-per-game scorer at Arizona State, and we were just desperate. Oh, who's going to score for this team? It's got to be Lockett. He's got to be the guy who scores. You know, 13 points a game at Arizona State, 7.5 at Marquette, and I think people, maybe I'd include myself in this group, a little disappointed at the beginning. So, oh, this guy can't score like we thought he could. Oh man, what a bummer. You know, this guy isn't nearly as good, but after expectations were adjusted, he's been a really nice addition. And as I said last week, this team is better with Trent Lockett than they would be without him. He gives you a little bit of scoring. He rebounds the ball. He doesn't kill you defensively. He just gives you a little bit of everything. And this team did need some leadership. So I think it's been great to have Lockett for 1 year. He filled the need, and we feel the need for him, apparently. I was surprised to see him as emotional as he was, but certainly he's been through a lot over the last couple years. You know, with his it's his mom that was dealing with cancer, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Right, and you know, I can't imagine dealing with something like that. And I'm glad Marquette was a good spot for him, and I think it's been great to have Lockett on the team this year. Junior, you know, he's a guy kind of like you talk about quarterbacks in football. Maybe he gets too much of the blame when the team loses, and you know, everyone sings his praises when the team wins. But Junior has been a really nice player for Marquette. He's had a nice career. He's actually in the top 10 all time in assists at Marquette now. He just he recently passed Doc Rivers. Cordell Henry, he'll probably pass Cordell Henry here over the next few games. I don't know if he'll pass McNeil. He's got about 40 assists to go to get to McNeil, so Marquette would have to probably play quite a few games maybe to get to McNeil at seventh all time, but he's going to finish in the top 10. Yeah, sure, Junior has some games when he struggles and people really get on his case, but Junior has been a solid point guard for Marquette. He's been great to have, and when he's been right, he's been so key to a lot of Marquette wins over the years, especially some of the big ones in the tournament, because when he's playing well, he's creating for guys like Blue and Gardner and Otule, and he's upped his scoring. He's certainly able to score a lot more than he was when he was a freshman and sophomore. You know, he came back from that torn Achilles as a freshman, and you remember that team. That was a team that was just really hurting for depth, and they really just needed another body out there. And I think it was admirable that he kind of, even though he wasn't 100%, was able to suck it up and get out there as a freshman and battle back from his injury and at least contribute and kind of spell guys. You know, it was Acker and Kubion were on that team, and we definitely could have used another guard out there, so he gave Marquette that. Junior has had a nice career, and he's been good, and I hope he can have more good games than bad over the next month or so. We'll see how far Marquette can go.
Yeah, well, and I think the one last takeaway is, for me anyway, is these two guys exemplified, I think, in surprisingly different ways, exemplified what draws at least me to be such a fan of Marquette basketball. Is these are good basketball players in their own regards, but they're also really good people. Right. I think that was evident in the speeches, and I think that's what makes the difference between being, say, a Marquette basketball fan versus, you know, a Kentucky basketball fan. I'm not impugning Kentucky necessarily, but
it's okay to impugn Kentucky.
But I think it's their that little extra emphasis in the whole person, and I think that's one of the appeals of Buzz is Buzz seems to, and I would by extension also say Larry Williams, the AD, and Father Pilars seem to care about the whole person, and that makes a difference. And I think it was reflected in the two seniors yesterday.
Junior, the first guy at Marquette to be signed by Buzz and then play 4 years and graduate as a senior by Buzz, because mostly it's been junior college guys, and he's had some other freshmen that he's signed that have transferred away. So Junior, really, this is kind of a landmark because this is the first guy to go all the way through the program under Buzz.
Yeah, and that was maybe a little bit of an awkward joke on Buzz's part. But kind of looked around cringing a little bit. But, I mean, it's reality, and it's good to see. You know, I did like his, well, I'm just too tough on the players. So, you know, if that's true, that's fine.
Hopefully there are many more to go through the Marquette program completely under Buzz as years go by.
Yeah, I think there will be. I mean, Vander will be the next one.
And so will Otule. And that's the other guy I want to talk about.
Otule will graduate as a doctor at this point.
Yeah, it will be Dr. Otule next year if he plays another year. He's already graduated, and it's something that people have speculated about and wondered about if he's going to come back for a sixth year next year. He seems to be undecided, and I can certainly understand his indecision. He has his degree. He struggled with injuries throughout his entire career. He is playing his best basketball of his life right now, and hopefully it continues and can lead Marquette to a big march. And something I said about Otule at the beginning of the year, and I maybe don't have this exact same opinion now, but I guess it's similar, is that if Otule, I said before the year, if Otule got hurt again, this is just in regards to the sixth year, if Otule got hurt again, I would say it would probably be time for him to say, you know, this basketball thing isn't working out, it's time for me to take this degree I have and, you know, do whatever I'm going to do for the rest of my life. But I also said if Otule has a great year, that he would be in a position where, you know, I have my degree, I'm playing good basketball, maybe let's see if I can make any money playing basketball now while I'm healthy, and then, you know, then move on with my life. And when I say that, I'm not saying he's going to get drafted and have a great NBA career, but if some team, whether it's professionally here in the United States or overseas, says, oh, we got this, you know, pretty athletic 6'10 kid with a lot of potential, let's bring him in and see if we can play a little basketball. I think that would might still be appealing to him to see if he can have any kind of professional basketball career and maybe to kind of strike while the iron is hot. So I don't know what his decision is going to be. Certainly, selfishly, as a fan, I would love to see him come back for another year and give this team a lot of – give some depth up front and see how far the team can go next year with him as a six-year senior. But I certainly understand the predicament he's in, that – he's been in college for 5 years now. He's going to be in for six if he stays for another year. But he is playing some good basketball, and he would mean a lot to this team for one more year.
I'd love to have him back, but I'm not going to judge him in any way. I wish him nothing but the best in whatever decision he makes. You know, I completely agree with you. It can go both ways this next year. So I hope to see him back, but I'm pretty sure he's going to be successful no matter what he does.
From all accounts, I've never met him, obviously, but from all accounts, great kid, good student. I don't know what he's studying, what his major is, what he plans to do after basketball, but I think he'll certainly find something to do and something to do very well, and he will be a hit. Whatever he does in life, people say, hey, you know, we have a rec league basketball team. You want to play for us? Look at this guy, 6'10", walking into the office. I think he'll be popular when he puts that resume in, but... I guess we'll see what happens. Maybe that's more of a discussion for the offseason. But right now, he is certainly going out strong. As I said earlier, 28 of 33 from the field over his last eight games. And if that continues, I feel pretty good about this team. When you're getting, you know, double-digit points from Chris, you're doing something right.
Yeah, I agree. It could happen, you know, with any one of the players. I mean, Chris has stepped up. Any of them have really stepped up. So. I just couldn't be more excited to have him. I was expecting 6 points a month from him, and we've gotten nothing but good stuff. So I'm really excited for him. Well, and one other aside on that is, I would like to talk to reporters and find out why all the details on his missing eye have been so slow to be developed. Because Paint Touch just did a great story on him the other day, where it was revealed that Buzz didn't even know he was missing an eye till he came on campus. How has it been 5 years he's been in the program and this just surfaces as a news item?
Right.
Well, and we didn't even know for the first 2 years. We didn't know for the first 2 years he didn't have an eye.
Right. His high school coach, he played for his high school coach his whole career. His high school coach, when Buzz, like I said, great article from Paint Touches. If you can find it, go back and find it. It really is a great read. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess, you know, I can honestly, I'm not in the exact same situation as Otule, but, you know, I am legally blind in my left eye. I don't have a glass eye. I just don't see very well out of my left eye. But I can see from the perspective that, you know, if no one asks, I wouldn't tell people.
Right. I totally get it. But again, I don't understand how that doesn't surface in some way, somehow. You know, I feel like 5 years from now, we're going to find out he was also missing an arm. And like things are just going to, he's like the Fort Knox of interesting secrets that journalism just can't seem to crack.
Right. Remember a few years ago, we didn't find out Jimmy Butler's story until draft night?
Yes.
That he had a blindside type story to him, and like no one even knew that until, like, not even on his senior day, like no one brought it up, said, oh, who are your folks there?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it just goes to show you that we could use a little more reporting on you know, the good works that Marquette basketball is doing, but if nothing else, it just makes for a funny time.
Yeah, Chris is a great story.
Yeah,
and he's had a good senior
super
senior season, and maybe he'll have one more senior season before it's all said and done. Just to wrap things up, looking forward to this week. Hopefully Marquette can get two road wins. As we discussed earlier, yes, it's on the road, but I still, given the circumstances, what Marquette has on the line and the teams that they're facing who are a little bit weakened, I still feel confident that a week from now we'll be talking about Marquette finishing the season with two wins and finishing at 14-4 in the conference. If that's enough to win the conference title, I guess that remains to be seen.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think we'll get two road wins and have a shot at the conference title. Either way, we got the double bye, so we can make some noise in the conference tournament. And we at this point, we're just talking seeding for the NCAA tournament, which is probably better than I thought we were going to be in October.
Yeah, get ready to feel dirty on Saturday, because we could be finding ourselves cheering for Syracuse and Notre Dame on Saturday to help us out.
I'm going to have an extra hot shower that day.
Just got to do what you got to do. All right, everybody, thanks for listening to the podcast. Again, thanks to everyone who has been listening to the podcast over the past couple weeks. Been good responses, been some, you know, had a lot of hits on the site, and we appreciate everybody who passes it along on Twitter, people, you know, like Anonymous Eagle and people who pass it along and retweet it. We appreciate all the listeners, and we appreciate feedback as well. Again, on Twitter, I am Joe McCann 3, Joe McCann 3. Phil can be found at Moof23, M3OsF23, and again, we really appreciate the listenership, and hope you guys are enjoying the podcast, and we certainly enjoy talking Marquette basketball, and we hope to keep it going for the foreseeable future. Phil, final thoughts?
Just looking forward to putting this week ahead of us, behind us, without any bumps, and get into the conference tournament. Just and excited that we can continue to do this podcast. It's been real fun so far.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and stay tuned and enjoy the week of Marquette basketball. Hope your week's seashells and balloons. We'll talk to you next week. Yeah, that didn't run as long as I thought. I think it was about an hour, maybe a little under.